Welcome, listeners, to a podcast that seeks to ignite the flames of inspiration and empowerment within the ServiceNow community. I'm Farah Wells, your host and the director of Linking Humans, the number one global partner for ServiceNow recruitment. Join us on this journey as we venture deep into the world of ServiceNow leaders, discover the very essence of their motivations and the unique mindset that paved the way for their remarkable success. Okay, so welcome everybody. Today we've got an amazing, amazing guest. His name is Chris Chambers. Now he's got 23 years IT experience with the last 15 years working with the ServiceNow platform and practicing service management and transformation. He is a certified master architect and has taught several ServiceNow courses, delivered as a primary instructor at both Knowledge 18 and 19, with specialisms in customer service management and performance analytics. So thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Farah.
No worries at all. So look, that introduction was like real, like, wow, you know, it's like you've been an instructor, you're a CMA qualified, you've got 15 years experience within the platform. I think, you know, honestly, people can learn so much from your experience and from things that you've learned along the way. It will just be really interesting for anybody who doesn't know you, just to kind of get a bit of a background from yourself, just about how you first got introduced to ServiceNow and how you've achieved such great success to be in your current role right now.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess going back slightly earlier than my IT career, I had a short career as an aircraft engineer in the Royal Navy. That I left in 2001 and I started working for a bank, actually, as an IT support analyst on their trade floor. And moving to various roles within the IT department over that time, including IT infrastructure and service desk. In 2007, so I've been there, you know, sort of six or so years, I became head of the service desk whilst retaining other roles that I'd done, like infrastructure analyst and front office support, that kind of thing. The organization needed to get a grip on managing these IT issues better. So we looked to see how other organizations might do it. And that's when we came across this thing called ITIL, or the IT Infrastructure Library. And this helped with the process of managing things like incidents, problems, changes, requests. So after some training, I then set about writing our key ITIL processes. And once we had those, I really needed to find a tool that would support these processes a lot better. The tool we were using was in-house written. It was pretty terrible. It had a Microsoft Access database on the back end, so it was completely unreliable as well. After a good 12 months of researching the market, trying lots of different solutions, we had a demonstration of ServiceNow, and everyone in the room was pretty blown away by it back then. And that was in 2009. I think it was mid-2009 we had that demo. And then later on that year, we actually implemented ServiceNow. And the implementation, this is unheard of now, but from start to go live was 2 weeks. In that time, we delivered the core ITSM processes that I mentioned. We had a service catalog. We had an LDAP integration. We had a lightweight CMDB, a VPN, and other platform features as well. But it was during those 2 weeks, I had one technical consultant from our implementation partner, an amazing lady who not only drove the implementation, but got me to do a lot of the development work as well. And she taught me an incredible amount in such a short space of time. And from there, and because of her, I was hooked on ServiceNow. I became the only sysadmin, and I went on to implement more ServiceNow products for the bank with discovery, custom applications, did upgrades and things, new plugins, enhancements, automation and the like, all whilst doing my main role of service desk and IT infrastructure. But this was not, ServiceNow was not the main part of my job, but it was the area I love most. So in 2015, I decided to leave the bank, leave IT infrastructure, change role and do ServiceNow full time. And that's when I became a senior technical consultant for a ServiceNow partner. And actually, that was when my learning curve, which I thought was pretty steep at the time, went vertical. But I haven't looked back since. And I know it was the best decision I could have made. And from there, and changing organization, to, you know, a lot of people I didn't know and who don't know me and didn't know what I was capable of. I felt I had to prove my worth and gain the trust of the leadership, of my colleagues. So I learned how to be a consultant as well as improving on my technical skills. Over the following 2 years, I had great success with my projects and my customers. I became a ServiceNow instructor, as you mentioned, all while sharing my learnings internally, learning from some seriously smart people as well. That partner then got acquired by a global ServiceNow partner. And again, through applying my best self each day, I climbed that corporate ladder, took more certifications, delivered outcomes for my customers. And that's when I was fortunate enough to get onto the CMA program. I left that organization in 2022 when I joined Conversational, the company I'm with at the moment, where I'm the practice lead. And here I am continuing to deliver great outcomes for our customers.
What a journey. Sounds amazing. And you know what? I think, what kind of struck me throughout your journey was, you mentioned about that lady at the beginning who, you know, really taught you a lot. But also when you joined the partner, you said it was quite a steep kind of learning, but you had great people around you. You know, I think that kind of brings in the question about mentorship, you know, especially when you're quite early on in your career. What role do you believe mentorship and guidance plays in career progression? What are your thoughts?
It's both those things are so important, super important. I think mentorship is something that works best when it happens naturally, as opposed to being, assigned a mentor or a mentee. But when it does happen, it's genuinely two-way. So when you look at it from that perspective, you see that as a mentor, you have a lot to gain from the relationship too. Even if it's you that's doing most of the talking, giving most of the advice, there's a lot you can learn from others. It doesn't have to be, I'm a mentor, you're the mentee. Actually, you're both mentors. Over the last 6 months or so, I actually have a neighbor who wanted a career change into tech. I bumped into them whilst walking my dog, actually, and we got chatting, and she came on the rest of the dog walk with us. I told them all about ServiceNow. I say they wanted to get into a tech career. And from there, they had interest. So we set about working on a development path. And since then, they've gone on to achieve their certified system administration. They've got that certification now. And they've managed to get themselves a new role with a ServiceNow partner. And I couldn't be more thrilled for them. But I got a lot of satisfaction knowing that I helped and actually learned what someone who's completely new to it needs. And so, again, it was two-way. But the same goes for colleagues and students I teach. I love seeing that light bulb moment in others when they get that concept or the thing you're trying to teach or advise on, or maybe it's achieving that important certification. Now, my own mentors have been colleagues and managers who've given me good advice, people who have qualities and strengths that you aspire to see and see as making a positive difference. They're also what I call passive mentors, and who exhibit those behaviors and traits that maybe aren't necessarily in line with your values, whose methods are having at least a perceived negative impact. They equally teach you how not to be. So it's not that formal mentorship relationship as such, but you see it in others and you can learn. The challenge often is to listen, to understand, sort the good advice from the bad, and then implement that for yourself in your own way.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the way that you've you really positioned it like as it's a two-way thing, you know, everybody is benefiting. And, you know, it's like what they say about, you know, teachers, you know, it's like the rewards that you see in the pupils that you teach, you know, it's just so internally rewarding. It makes it all worthwhile. And obviously being an instructor, you must get that feeling, you know, when somebody has worked really hard, but you know, it's been your influence and your teaching that's kind of given them that motivation to work really hard to kind of achieve it. So I think that's amazing. Yeah, that's brilliant. And, you know, I think all throughout your career as well, you know, I think, you know, you've achieved such greatness. You know, what's been your mindset? Like, what's been that attitude that you think has been instrumental in your journey to the top? Like, how did you develop it? How do you maintain it as well?
I guess looking back when I worked for the bank, I covered almost all of the tech systems that they had. And I think I became a little too sure of myself. There was even a point where I used to say, if it's got a cable on the end, come to me, kind of thing. And actually, in the latter days with Wi-Fi, if it doesn't even have a cable, just come to me. So I just became I became a bit too sure of myself, if I look back and I'm being honest. So changing role and company to something where I wasn't the best, and I had a lot to learn and prove, that gave me a real kick that I think I needed. And it taught me to have that always learning mindset, to have a greater respect for others' knowledge, their opinions, the ways they work, and see things from different perspectives. Working for the global partner allowed me to work with a global team, which is fantastic. I talked to, across the pond, across the time zones in both directions. And what that opened my eyes to was things like inclusivity, unconscious bias, understanding people's strengths, as well as exposure and appreciation for different business processes and ways of working. So I now see that I always have something to learn and can always improve upon myself, whether from, be it a book, an experience, or from others.
Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, absolutely. And you know what, just talk about like unconscious bias and inclusivity. I put a post out on LinkedIn that I saw, which was, I've got real admiration for anyone who does business in their second language, because someone who's got an accent, they've really had to learn, and I think that's really admirable. So, and I think
absolutely.
That's, when you work on a global kind of scale, you really, it was quite funny when I got my job at Emirates, one of my interview questions were like, oh, it's a very multicultural department we've got, would you be okay? And I just thought, well, I come from London, it's so multicultural. But then I realized actually, no, everyone in London, still thinks like a Londoner, or still, thinks the same way. But actually, when you start working with people from different cultures around the world, people do, you can see the differences. But I think it's just being able to learn and adapt. So, which
absolutely,
is amazing.
Yeah. And it's some of my customers will have heard this. My colleagues definitely will have done. Sometimes I ask, let's say, an icebreaker question in a workshop, or when I've just, we're in that kind of situation. If you could have a superpower, what would your superpower be? And there are some fantastic ones out there, and ones that are way better than what I chose, which I'm tempted to switch. But going back to what you said about being able to talk in a second language at a business level, so my superpower would be to be able to speak and understand any and all languages fluently. So not just being able to, that's to write it, to hear it and comprehend it, to speak it. And I'm not just talking about languages that humans speak. I'd love to be able to talk to the animals, for example. And I'd love to be an absolute genius with JavaScript, Python, and all the others. So
yeah,
that would be my superpower.
Yeah, that's a great superpower to have. So yeah, that's amazing. So obviously, for people that are joining the industry, what do you think? Especially being an instructor, what do you think are the key skills or expertise that they should kind of learn or establish themselves within the ServiceNow space, just to kind of help enhance their careers and basically stand out from the industry? Yeah, maybe let's say someone is next gen, that they've had that kind of introduction and now they're at that point now where they're like, what should I do? What advice would you, from your perspective, give?
I think, look, everyone's path's different. I started out as an aircraft engineer, What did I want to do when I was really young? I wanted to fix things. That was what I was told I was good at. And I think that's probably why I'm in a tech career. So when I was leaving school, there was one of three careers I wanted. It was either in computers or in some kind of mechanical engineering, like actually before aircraft came along, which is seems a bit sort of Top Gun and flashy. It was cars. I would have been happy being a mechanic because I'm fixing something. And the third choice was chef, but it turns out I'm not very good at cooking. So I've done two of them. I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to go after the chef thing because it's just not for me. But I'd say everyone's path is different. There's a cliche that exists for a reason. There's no two paths the same, but there are qualities that are going to help you succeed. And I try to use, four of them. The first one for me is a must. It's being truthful. Now, trust takes a long time to build, but nothing breaks it quicker than lying. If a person can lie to another person, it impacts not just those two people. There's a book by Sam Harris called Lying, actually, that helped me teach that. The second thing would be perseverance, so the willingness to try and fail and then try again. We have a quote on our on the wall in our office. If the plan is not working, change the plan, not the goal. So it's very much all about that fail fast. You know what goal you're looking to achieve, but your method isn't working. So keep at it. Just try changing the parameters and you know, next time you might be successful, but also learn from your mistakes as well. And don't be afraid to ask for help, and definitely own up to those mistakes or admit you're wrong. That's a strength, not a weakness. And above all, always be kind and treat others with respect and care.
Yeah, they're such wise words. And that's the thing, you know, if you're honest, and especially when it comes to mistakes, right, we all make them. And I suppose it all comes down to like the company culture as well, to be able to allow employees to express that, look, I've kind of messed up here. Please don't go too crazy, but then it's just being able to learn from it as well, which is a really big thing. And I really like that saying that you said about, change the plan, not the goal, because I think that a lot of people think, oh, well, the goal's not achievable. You know, let's do something, you know, completely different. And I think that's great. It's like just working a different way, which really helps. So yeah, amazing. Yeah.
From a ServiceNow skills perspective, for anyone who's looking to get into establish themselves in the ServiceNow ecosystem, as I mentioned, I had a neighbor who got into ServiceNow from Fresh. I managed to get them a golden ticket. So this was something that was given to all Knowledge 2023 attendees that you then pass on to someone else who's not in the ServiceNow ecosystem already. And that gives them unfettered access to Now Learning material for free. From there, I directed them on what courses to take. So sysadmin course, ITSM fundamentals, app developer, scripting, and there's tons and tons of content on the developer portal itself. After that, or alongside, I encourage them to seek out business process awareness. So again, starting with the ITIL Foundation course is a great place, and it gives the context of why we need a platform like ServiceNow, you know, for the service management aspect that companies must undertake.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And, you know, just talking about obviously like your neighbor, you know, that they were new to it. I mean, ServiceNow is rapidly evolving, you know, a platform with new features, updates that come up. How can people stay up to date with the latest advancements and just make sure their skills remain relevant and in demand?
It's not easy. It's a massive platform. And, you know, some of your previous guests have alluded to that as well, that you can't be an expert on the whole platform anymore. I think at one point I felt like, yes, I know everything and it doesn't matter what comes along, I'll nail it really quickly. But that's not true anymore. It's evolved far, far faster than anyone can keep pace with. So I think it's important to any area that you're looking to get into or stay abreast of, there's a few places that I go to anyway. And they have been mentioned before by your previous guests, but it's Now Learning. And the developer site, they often have new learning content that you can go and take to learn about that particular product line or specific piece of functionality. You have the ServiceNow doc site as well, which has the release notes, and oftentimes they'll have sort of stepped articles that guide you on how to implement something or what to do next. If those things aren't proving all that useful and you're still not sure, you can't find anything on Now Learning, which happens, then I just think installing and playing with the app whilst following along with the docs articles. Perhaps that application has like a guided setup that you can use as well, which might help you work it out. But it's, as I say, installing and playing with it is the best way to learn, I think. And I had this with some functionality that's part of it's part of what's called guided decisions, and it's called decision trees. So I couldn't find anything on Now Learning. I had a look at docs and I thought, okay, it kind of makes sense. But I really got to grips with it when I played it, and that's when I understood how to use it.
That's amazing.
Beyond those, you've got the ServiceNow community, obviously, with YouTube and podcasts. If you're working for a ServiceNow partner or ServiceNow themselves, there are enablement sessions you can attend or watch back on demand. When I'm implementing a product, if it's something I've not done before, then I'm going to the doc site, to the ServiceNow knowledge base, and of course, community. They're going to help you the most.
Definitely. And, you know, that's something that I can vouch for as well, is the community aspect. You know, everybody's just so helpful, you know, and I've worked in other tech domains. For me, I think once I started working within the ServiceNow ecosystem, I was just like, wow, everyone is just so nice and so incredible and so helpful. Where you don't really get that in other tech stacks sometimes, you know, they can be a bit sharp and, you know, especially, you know, in my station as a recruiter, you know, coming in. But, you know, and also what I found is, even for me, I'm trying to learn about the technology side of things, ServiceNow. And, you know, sometimes I'll read something on someone's CV or resume and I'll say, oh, what does that mean? Like, what does that actually do? And honestly, people are so helpful. Like, they'll sit there and they'll explain it and they'll break it down, which is great. And so that's the thing. If anybody does need help, you can reach out to people. You know, you obviously, you've got the organization, but there are people on LinkedIn that are just open to questions and help. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think anyone really sets out to have anyone else fail. Everyone wants everyone to succeed. And with that, and that is in abundance in the ServiceNow ecosystem, as you said. So it's a collaborative and a positive environment in which to work and grow. Absolutely.
No, definitely. And, you know, just kind of talking about, like, you know, good environments and stuff, like, obviously mental and emotional well-being is such a hot topic at the moment. You know, and I think, you know, having a balanced, you know, like, positivity, you know, is crucial for success. How do you personally prioritize your self-care and just try to manage your stress so you don't burn out, you know, because I can imagine your role's quite demanding. Like, are there any practices that you follow or habits?
There are, and I think you learn them as you go through your career. I think when you're younger, you have less, should we say, dependence, less responsibilities. You know, you can stay up till midnight, 1 o'clock coding and get up the next day and carry on. I guess youth helps there. But there does come a time when your body, your mind say enough's enough. Therefore, I think you have to have boundaries. I learned from a leader who shared their own ways of taking better care of themselves. The key points were that you are the boss of you and you elect what you spend yourself on. Notice I didn't say time. This is not about managing your time more wisely. It's about you managing yourself more wisely. Another point they made was that no is an acceptable response to any request you receive, meaning not every ask made of you is weighted equally in terms of importance or relevance. And there are three acceptable responses to every request: yes, no, or a counter offer. So if you're asked, you know, I need this report by 4 p.m. today, can you get that to me? If your answer is yes, great. If you can't do it by 4 p.m., but perhaps you can do it by 5 p.m., that's a counter offer. That's also great. If you think it's an unnecessary request or a poor use of your time, then no, and giving reasons is also an acceptable response. Either way, you and the person who's making that request will come to some agreement, which I guess effectively is a counter offer.
Definitely. Does that work in global organizations? Like,
it does. It really does. Because we, when you think about a global organization, you're still working with people locally, if that makes sense. So even if they're on the other end of a Zoom call or Teams or whatever, it's still that relationship you have with that person. And managing their expectations, telling them, say, if you say, look, okay, you want this done by then, I've also got this, is where in the priority do you think your request is? Because I've got all these other things I'm balancing. As soon as they understand your workload and what you have going on, they will probably be like, ah, this guy's super busy. Companies hire you because you have a brain and an opinion, and they want you for those things. Blindly accepting every request is a good way to burn yourself out by overworking. There was when I was in the Navy, I had a line manager who took a slightly different approach, and this was his quote. I was asking about some work that I felt we needed to get done. He said to me, "Chris, why do today what you can put off until tomorrow?" And maybe that's part of the Navy way of thinking. And on the face of it, it may appear as laziness on their part. But if you break it down, you look into it a bit deeper, they're actually prioritizing their workload, and that method worked for them.
Mm. Definitely. And I love the fact that it's like communication, right? So you kind of, as long as you explain to the person on the other end what you said, like, okay, I've got all of this going on, where do you want me to put your work into it? People get it, right? So yeah, I think, yeah, 100%. And I think that's amazing. It's, you know, if you communicate, you will not burn out. So yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, just kind of, reflecting on your own career journey, what advice would you give to sort of young ServiceNow professionals, you know, aspiring to enter the industry or follow a similar path to reach the levels that you have?
Again, I think it's comes down to working, you know, smart, applying yourself. Again, the qualities that I mentioned before around being truthful, having that perseverance, always giving it a go and trying. Knowing that, and again, I had this where I came from, an organization where I had tons and tons of knowledge across the entire IT infrastructure, and that it was, you know, I felt like I was at the top of the tree in that sense. But really, I was just working for a service desk in a bank. You know, they were a cost to the organization, not a business side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Moving then to a, you know, different role. I'm a consultant now. You know, it's not being afraid to ask for help, owning up to your mistakes, even if it appears that you really ought to know what it is. That's okay if you don't. If you've never done it, you've never done it. And I think that ties in with being truthful. Said, look, I've not done this. I'm going to give it a go. What resources can you help me with? That's asking for help. And I think aside from setting yourself up some kind of development plan for what you want to achieve from a technical perspective, again, those would be technical certifications you're after for a technical career track in ServiceNow. But it's those qualities that are going to be consistent throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just talking about ServiceNow certifications, how important are they? Like, just in terms of advancing people's careers, and are there any particular certifications that you would recommend?
Those certifications, they get you in the door for an interview. They show you have a level of knowledge about a certain aspect, but it doesn't always translate into competence or capability. So I feel like that's when experience is important. And now you can still get that if you're net new to the ServiceNow ecosystem, like my neighbor was, where they can, you know, create custom apps for something that resonates with them. Customize a portal, show off something in your PDI that you might have built. Add those things to your CV. And again, it's that honesty aspect where, look, I'm new. I've done some training. I'm on my path. This is the types of things I've done in those early days. And I've interviewed people who both have zero certifications and years of experience, and those that have many certifications, but perhaps far less experience. And I have hired the ones without certifications in the past because they're not the be-all and end-all, but they do get you noticed. Mm-hmm. So you have to have something on your CV.
Yeah.
To advance your career, again, from a technical perspective, keep going with those implementation certifications. When you have enough of those, along with the experience, then perhaps the certified technical architect or certified master architect programs, one of those might be for you.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, like, obviously you're a primary instructor. Like, for anybody who is really experienced and thinks, oh, that's something that I'd like to do, does it take up a lot of your time? Or is it something that's you've kind of combined it with your work?
B becoming an instructor, you mean?
Yeah. And teaching those courses, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, it does take time. And I say this to budding instructors, so I kind of mentor and guide some of our own people to becoming instructors as well. And if you said to me back in when I worked for the bank, Chris, you need to stand up 2 days and teach this course or that, I'd be like, forget it. I wouldn't even do a presentation, to colleagues kind of thing. It would fill me with anxiety. Talking to an audience, you wouldn't have had me do that. So it does take some your time, absolutely, to pick up and learn what traits are good, are going to serve you well for communication and becoming an instructor. It takes time to prep for that class, and prep comes in different forms of reading your course notes, practicing the labs, practicing your demonstrations, making sure when if you're going to teach on site, you've got spare cables and things like that. All of those types of things can keep anxiety a lot lower, but they do take time to do.
Yeah. And how did you kind of get into it? Like, how did you even become an instructor?
So working for the ServiceNow partner back in 2016, I think to maintain, I think back then it was the gold partner status, you had to have a certified instructor on the books. And we had none at the time. And again, the ask went out to the techies, who fancy being an instructor, and feeling like I had to prove myself in certain areas. I'm a senior, I'm not as technical as some other seniors, but I've got all this experience in infrastructure, which helps me in certain client conversations. Why not? Let's give it a go. I'm just going to push myself and see what happens. But it was anxiety filling, absolutely. However, I don't think without becoming an instructor, I would potentially have sat the CMA at all.
Wow. So it's like it led the path to like greatness, didn't it? So yeah, amazing. And then that's the thing, isn't it? It's sometimes it's like we all feel it, you know, it's like getting out that comfort zone. And even for me, like with the podcast, it took me a whole year to get the courage to kind of go, you know, I'm going to do this. I've been talking about it forever. And yeah, and sometimes you just need to get yourself out of that comfort zone. And I love it now. I wouldn't change it for the world. And
brilliant.
I'm fantastic. Guessing same with you, with the instructor, like, you know, it's the enjoyment comes into it. So, no, that's amazing. Oh, brilliant. Well, look, my final question. Okay. So anyone who hasn't seen Back to the Future, it's a must watch film. So if you could go back in a time machine and talk to your 21-year-old self, what advice would you give him? And this could be totally non-work related.
So my answer to this is kind of non-work related. I've listened back to some of your others and they all have a similar message and I get it and they're absolutely right. So I've got a slight twist that I'll come to nearer the end, but I guess I might seek out Fred Luddy and get on board with what he was doing he would be doing in a few years from me being 21. There is something in me, though, that says I wouldn't want to jeopardize what I have today. So, for example, if I was a millionaire before I met my wife, would I have still met her? Would we have our daughter? Because I wouldn't want to jeopardize that at all. So the stocks thing and making, you know, don't think there's much in my life I would change. But what I would do, I'd tell my 21-year-old self to make the most of my parents and loved ones, to tell that 21-year-old of certain dates, names and places that I should get myself to prevent tragedy of lost loved ones, basically.
Yeah.
So the twist then is perhaps a little bit more Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap than Marty McFly and Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, I'm not sure if you know about the Quantum Leap. It was a TV series that me and my younger brother loved watching in the 90s. And this is where Sam Beckett could travel back within his own lifetime to put right what once went wrong. And it was always or nearly always averting tragedy. So yeah. I think it would have to be along those lines. I'm going to say, do I want to be a millionaire? Do I want to be, you know, not having to work, that kind of thing? I think I'm happy with my lot, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. And, you know, I think it's such an important message. You know, it's the people that make it, right? It's the love that you have around you. I think that kind of just makes life. And, you know, you could be, you know, in the gutter, but, you know, if you've got good people around you, and then you hopefully wouldn't be in that situation. So,
there's a saying, if you're in the gutter, then at least you're looking up at the stars.
Yes, yeah. That's amazing. I love that. So brilliant. Well, look, Chris, it's been so fantastic to speak with you. It's been absolutely brilliant to hear your wisdom, your journey. And I hope everybody at home, all the listeners, that you've really sort of picked up some golden nuggets. So thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And thanks again for having me, Farah. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.